Be'ezrat Hashem. Okay, right. We are beginning now with a text, which is a Kabbalistic Hasidic discourse said by the late Lubavitcher Rebbe on Lag BaOmer, 1986, Tafshin Mem Vav. So, and it revolves around a story in the Zohar, and in the third section of the Zohar. And the story is that there was a time that the world needed rain. See, the Zohar, as you probably know, revolves around the figure of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Someone called Professor Libus in the Hebrew University wrote an article, The Mashiach of the Zohar, about Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Rashbi as the sort of the central figure in the Zohar. Students of Hasidism might say the Rebbe of the Zohar.
What's his name, Rabbi Shimon?
Shimon bar Yochai.
Bar Yochai.
Now, Yochai is Yud Vav Chet Aleph Yud. In fact, generally, when the Talmud refers to Rabbi Shimon, which is very, very frequently, it is Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. The general Rabbi Shimon is Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. There are other Rabbi Shimons in the Talmud. One of them is actually mentioned in this discourse. But the most commonly mentioned Rabbi Shimon is Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. So he's got like two faces. There's Rabbi Shimon the Halachist, who is a important figure in the halachic tradition. He is lenient about certain things, and sometimes the Talmud said, "Dayo l'Rabbi Shimon lismoch alav." It's enough. Rabbi Shimon's great enough that we can rely on him, even when he is more lenient than the other rabbis. So maybe the halacha goes according to the other rabbis, but b'shat hadchak, but in a difficult situation, you can rely on Rabbi Shimon. So that's in his halachic mode. And then there's a fascinating story about him in the Talmud, in Masechet Shabbat, aptly enough on page 33, since the Yotzad of Rashbi is the 33rd day of the Omer. And and that's the story of Rabbi Shimon and his son in the cave, that there was a discussion about the Romans. And one person said, Rabbi Yehuda, he said, the Romans are wonderful people. They make marketplaces. They make bridges. And Rabbi Shimon said, what are you talking about? They only make the marketplaces to put zonot there. They only make the bridges in order to charge tolls. And they're all doing it for their own sake. And there was someone else sitting there. And he told someone, and so eventually the Romans heard about it. And as a result, they wanted to arrest Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon had to hide. And he and his son, eventually, they ended up living in a cave in the desert somewhere where miraculously there was a stream and a carob tree which fed them for 12 years. They came out of the cave, and Rabbi Shimon saw some people plowing in the field. He said, look at this. Menichim chai olam v'oskim b'chai isha. They abandon eternal life and they're involved with ordinary, temporary life. What's going on? People working. Terrible. How could they do that? They should just be contemplating the divine. And everything he looked at burst into flames. So a voice from heaven said, have you come out to destroy my world? Go back into your cave. And chizru lemaratchem, go back into your cave. And they went back for another year. And then they came out again. So this time Rabbi Shimon said to his son, Dayo le'olam ani v'ata. It's enough for the world, you and me. In other words, you and me, we know the truth, that there's a spiritual reality and it's ridiculous to do anything else. But, you know, you have to put up with ordinary people. However, there's a third stage. The third stage is they suddenly see a man hurrying with two bundles of hadassim under his arm, two bundles of fragrant myrtle, which is a Sephardi custom to have myrtle at one's Shabbat home or Shabbat table. So they said to him, what are you doing? Where are you running so hurriedly with these myrtle? He said, what are you talking about? I'm running home. It's Erev Shabbat. I've got to get home for Shabbat. And these myrtles are to make a nice Shabbat. So why do you have two bundles? They said. Well, one is Keneged Zachor and the other one Keneged Shamor. That there are two texts of the Ten Commandments. One in Yitro, one in Vayetchanan. And in one it says Zachor et Yom HaShabbat. And the other one it says Shamor et Yom HaShabbat. Remember and guard the Sabbath day. So because of that we have two Shabbat candles. That's why we have a minimal, generally, two Shabbat candles. And and that's why he was having two bundles of adasim, of myrtle. So Rabbi Shimon said, look at that. Look at that. That through keeping mitzvot, people are close to God. That's a remarkable thing. And it's like he made the discovery that in the practical world, there is also a deep spiritual connection with God. So it's a very interesting story about the process of the mystic, the way in which the mystic looks at the world, that on the one hand, it's intolerable, and on another level, it becomes elitist, and on the third level, it becomes inclusivist. So, that's the story there. That's in the Talmud. And then we have the Zohar. And the Zohar is all about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and his Chavraya, his Talmidim, his disciples, and going to different places with his disciples, talking to his disciples, teaching his disciples, and the idea that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is the author of the Zohar with teachings transmitted to him by Eliyahu HaNavi and other mystical ways of gaining information. And so there we have the spirituality of the Zohar. So the story here in the Zohar is a story that once the world needed rain, and they came to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who was called Rashbi. They came to Rashbi, and they said to him, the world needs rain, and he taught a Torah teaching. And the Torah teaching was on the phrase from Psalms, Hine matov umanaim, shevet achim gam yachad. Now this is a song that people sing around campfires, whether or not it's Lag B'Omer. But how pleasant it is, brothers sitting together. And having said this rather long, I think it is, Torah teaching, the rain began falling. So that's the starting point of this discourse. So first of all, we'll have the Maimonigan. The discourse begins Itah B'Zohar. We learn in the Zohar, and it tells that story very briefly. And so we'll have the melody of the discourse, and then we will try to explore it. It's not very long, and maybe we'll be able to finish it, even though I'm afraid we began late. Sorry about that. Oh ya 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 yo ya 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 yo ma ya ma ya ma ya 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 ma yo ha yire dam ba ya yire dam ba yo aho ya yire dam ba ya ya yo ya yire dam ba ya ma yo ha yire dam ba ya yire dam ba yo ya ma ya ma ya ba bam bam ho ba ya ba ya ye ya ba yo bam ba yo ya bam bam. Itaba Zohar, we learn in the Zohar. And it says at the bottom where it is, Chelik Gimel, page Nuntet, the beginning of the second site, Resh Amud Bet. Zim Nechade Havetzchicha Alma Lemitcha. One time the world needed rain. Atul Kamed de Rabbi Shimon, they came before Rabbi Shimon, and then it goes on, Va'al Yedei Shedarash Lehem B'Pasuk, and through the fact that he expounded the verse, Matov u'manayim shevet achim, how beautiful, how good, how pleasant it is, brothers sitting together. And then it gives an immediate explanation of what this verse is about. Sheze inyan hayichud. What's the next abbreviation? Can anyone work out? The beginning of the third line. Zenyan hayichud.
The zug?
Near. Yes, it's zayin vav nun. The ze'er v'nukva. Ze'er is zachar in the sfirot. Ze'er actually, now this launches us right into the image of the sfirot, which is the central theme in many ways of the Zohar. But the Zohar doesn't usually talk about the Sefirot in open terms, but in different kinds of imagery. Sometimes it speaks about them in terms that are very obviously Chesed, Gvura. But many times the Zohar speaks in a kind of imagery. Kol hanachalot holchim el hayom v'hayam enene maleh, which kol hanachalim holchot el hayom. All the streams run down to the sea, and the sea is never full, meaning the different sfirot come down to the sfira malchut. It uses imagery of different kinds. But here, the author, Rabbi Menachem Mendel, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, based on previous Chabad teachings, is explaining this verse itself as meaning this Kabbalistic setup. So let's just try and see. We have at the top of the page the infinite, right? Ein Sof. Ein Sof Baruch Hu. We then have a level which is called Keter, which the crown, it's like a, it's sometimes spoken of as a half sphira, it's beyond, it's a very, very spiritual dimension. And then, in fact, normally, like strictly speaking, when you count Keter, you don't count Dat. But you then have the concept Chabad, Chochma, I'll just put initials, Chochma, Bina, Dat, wisdom, understanding, knowledge, which are like the cerebral, here, Chochma, Bina, and Dat, although when Keter is there, you don't count Dat, but somehow. And then we have Chesed, kindness, severity, Gvura, Tiferet, which is some in the middle, which is sometimes explained as mercy. And then we have victory, Netzach, Hod, which is splendor or submission. And then there is Yesod, which is dedication. Now, these six Sfirot are called Ze'er Ampin. And that contrasts with Keter, which is Arich Ampin. So Arich is some kind of, Keter is some kind of, I mean, everything here is infinite. And talking of mathematics before, when I began learning Chabad Hasidic teachings many years ago, I was pleased that I had studied a little bit in a kind of informal way on the mathematical concept of different orders of infinity. Now, at that time, that wasn't part of A-level math. It might be now, I don't know. But it wasn't then. However, and I didn't do math at university. In fact, psychology had a lot of stats in it. So I eventually moved over to Jewish history. The concept of different orders of infinity, Aleph Naught, Aleph 1, Aleph Naught is the number of real integers. Aleph 1 is the number of real functions, which is like, you know, Be'ein Aroch is infinitely more. And then it goes on and on and on. This was a mathematical concept devised by a Jewish mathematician who's in the 30s. And then it eventually, there's Aleph with the index Aleph. Have you come across this? Anyway, it's a little bit like this, so to speak, in this spiritual realm, because everything is infinite, and nonetheless you have things on a much higher level of infinity. So Keter is at a much higher level of infinity, which is Arichampin, much higher than these lower Sfirot, Chesed, Gvura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, which are Ze'er. So that's why that's called Ze'er, which literally means small. So that's the minor visage. It's translated in the early attempts to translate the Lurianic writings first into Latin, then into English. So that's Ze'er functions, so to speak, as the male component of the Sfirot, because then comes Malchut, the feminine, we'll give her a different color, because that Malchut is the feminine dimension, kingship, and much of the drama of existence has to do with a flow coming down from these Sfirot, this sort of male dimension, to this female dimension, and them connecting together. The separation among the Sfirot is the exile that the world is suffering from. The separation is the exile of the Shekhinah. And because the Shekhinah is in exile, therefore the world, in the practicalities of the world, very often conceals godliness completely. Whereas when there is a unification between these male Sfirot, Ze'er, and Nukva. So this is called in Aramaic, Nukva, so the feminine, like Nukiva. So Ze'er and Nukva, and they are put as an abbreviation, Zayin Vav Nun, which looks like Zachav and Nukiva, and in effect it is that. But it's actually using these Kabbalistic, Lurianic Kabbalistic terms. So what it explains here is that Hine Matov Manaim Shevet Achim Gam Yachad, the idea of the brothers sitting happily together, really it's like a brother and sister, a husband and wife. It is Zev and Nukva who join together, Yichud Zev and Nukva, the unity of this male and female dimension of the Sfirot, and Al Yedei Zeh Yarad Hamata. And through that, it began to rain and rain, although for English people, rain means something dismal. In Israel, rain means bracha, and the crops will grow usually. I mean, I suppose everything is much more complicated now with global warming and crops several times a year. But in general, rain is seen as a sign of blessing. Gishmei bracha. Rain of blessing, and even if it's pouring with rain, there's a verse, Geshem Nedavot, with a nice story by, who is it? Modern Israeli writer. Geshem Nedavot. You can't tell me. Okay. Now, v'yesh lomer, one can suggest hadiyuk bazer, that the point is being made here. Shekashahaya olam tzarich lamata, when the world needed rain, ba'ul Rashbi, they came to Rashbi. Ki Rashbi haya kashur, because Rashbi was connected. Lo rak im dalet amotav, not only with his four amot, his own little corner, ele im kol ha'olam kulo, but with the whole world. Now, that's an interesting concept. The world, needed rain. And the way that this discourse, this Maima, explores that, it's not just that in a particular village they needed rain, it's that the world had a lack, the world had a problem. And because the world had a problem, they came to Rashbi. And they came to Rashbi because Rashbi would be concerned about the problem. Rashbi is also not just concerned about the place where he lives, he's concerned about everywhere. So there you have the Mashiach of the Zohar and the Rebbe of the Zohar, because this is a demut of a Rebbe. What is a Hasidic Rebbe? A Rebbe is someone who cares. That's the, if you like, a kind of a definition. What is a Rebbe? A Rebbe is someone who cares. And the and that sense of caring, then there's also a question. How far does a Rebbe care? I was once in a the Vizhnitz, vestibule of the Vizhnitsa mikveh. So there was a poster there about something that was happening in Lubavitch House relating to the Lubavitch Rebbe. It was in the years when they would have satellite simultaneous video being able to see the Rebbe giving a talk at a hitvaadut, at a Hasidic gathering in the 1980s. And it was a very dramatic event, and something like 1,000 people would come to Lubavitch House in the middle of the night, and men upstairs, women downstairs, and there was simultaneous translation, I think. And there was the Rebbe speaking, and it was a very dramatic thing. You know, on big screens with a satellite on the top of the post office tower, British Telecom tower, had a big satellite dish, and there was a satellite dish on Lubavitch House in Stamford Hill to pick it up. This, at that stage, that was a very new technology, which had just been developed in order to cover the royal wedding of Prince Charles and Princess Diana. And because of that, so we were able to do this for the Rebbe's 80th birthday. For the Rebbe's 80th birthday, that's when it began, basically, in 1982. So I was there in this little vestibule, and there were a group of different people there, and there was a little boy. And they're looking at this poster, you know, a little boy with payas. And there he's looking at the Lubavitch Rebbe, this like thing about the Lubavitch Rebbe, probably had a picture of the Lubavitch Rebbe. And the little boy says to his father, "Ich verstehe," in Yiddish, "I understand. The Vizhnitz Rebbe is for the Vizhnitz Chassidim. The Vizhnitz Rebbe is for the Vizhnitz Chassidim. And the Lubavitch Rebbe is for Alaman. And the Lubavitch Rebbe is for everyone." Now, whether his father agreed with that interpretation, I don't know. But I was struck by it. And I thought that that was a good assessment by the little boy, because the Lubavitcher Rebbe did regard the whole world, from, not from, Jew, non-Jew, as having a claim on him. And and that was an interesting aspect. And the Rebbe, if you like, is reading this in, or whichever way it's going, whether the image of Rashbi and the Rebbe, or the image of the Rebbe and Rashbi, that here they come to Rashbi because he feels a sense of responsibility for the whole world. Now, in case we think that that is just an interpretation which is inserted into the image of Rashbi, the Talmud tells us, and this is a very striking thing, it's Sukkah, page 45b. I actually brought with the Talmud, just in order, in this little edition, just to be able to check it up. So we have here, page 45b, because what he's saying is, it's a very interesting statement. Omar Rabbi Yirmiyah said, Well, the Omar Chizkiah said, Omar Rabbi Yirmiyah said, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, in the name of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Yochol Ani Liftor Eskol Ha'olam Kuloi Min Hadin. I am able to acquit the whole world from judgment. But this is not a statement in the Zohar, this is a statement in the Talmud. It's a fascinating statement. I am able to acquit the whole world from judgment. Miyom shenivreti ad ata. From the day that I was born until now. So, I don't know how old he was at that moment. Let's say he was 50 years old. So he's able to say, I can acquit my entire generation. Everyone is innocent. Whatever they think they might have done, I can acquit them and they are innocent. Interesting. Then he goes on. V'ilmoli Eliezer b'ni imi, and if Eliezer, my son, would be with me, then the two of us together can do it miyom shenivra ha'olam b'ad achshav, from the day the world was created until now. So in other words, we can achieve atonement. We can achieve a tikkun for all the generations right up to today. V'ilmole Yotam ben Uziyahu imanu, and if Yotam, the son of Uziyahu, the king, in the Book of Kings, Sefer Melachim, there's someone called Yotam who was a child, a very spiritual person. If Yotam would be with us, then we would be able to do it miyom shenivra olam ad sofo, from the day that the world was created forever. Now that's an amazing statement. And in terms of the what are the goals of spiritual people? One way of understanding spiritual goals are that a person should go to heaven. You know, you're presented with a world which has many temptations, and if you keep away from the wrong temptations, so you go to Gan Eden instead of, God forbid, Gehinnom. But then there are higher goals, and the higher goals have to do with other people. Lifting other people, that other people should go to Gan Eden, or other people should live in Gan Eden now, that the world should become a Gan Eden, which is a way of putting the messianic image, that the ultimate goals of existence should be realized now. So that's a kind of spiritual quest. So Rashbi actually says in the Talmud, as reported by Rabbi Yirmiyah and as reported by Chizkiyah, with the same level of seriousness as reporting a rule about Hilchot Shabbat or something like that, that Rabbi Rashbi has got this power to bring atonement. Liftor et kol ha'olam kulo min hadin. Okay, so let's miss out the brackets. It's just repeating here the Talmud. Miyom shenivreti at'ata, I can bring atonement for the whole world, bring acquittal, tikkun, for the whole world, using a Kabbalistic term, for the whole world from my generation, from when I was born till now. And if my son, V'ilmole Eliezer b'ni imi miyom shenivra olam v'ad achshav, and if my son Eliezer is with me from the beginning of the world till now, and if Yotam ben Uziyahu is with me, then miyom shenivra olam v'ad sofo, the whole existence of the world. In other words, bringing total redemptive innocence to the world. One of the stories about Rashbi is that the keshet was never seen in his lifetime. The keshet, the rainbow, was never seen, because the rainbow, it says in the Sedra Noach, after the flood, God says to Noach, V'haya ba'anani anan, when I make clouds, in other words, when I'm angry with the world, and I'm thinking of destroying the world, then there will be the rainbow in the sky, and that will remind me that I promise not to destroy the world with a flood the way that it happened in the time of Noah. So whenever there is a rainbow, we make a blessing that God remembers the covenant not to destroy the world. But while Rashbi was alive, there didn't need to be the rainbow because it never came to such a point, because Rashbi himself was bringing innocence.
He was the rainbow.
That's right. He was the rainbow, or he kept the negativity at bay. The rainbow reminds God that despite the negativity, don't destroy. Whereas Rashbi was able to bring a tikkun to his generation that it was innocent, whatever they were doing. Which of course has all kinds of... does that mean that you can do anything as long as you've got Rashbi? So that's... He lived in the 2nd century of the Common Era. He was a disciple of Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva died in 135.
The Roman time.
Yes, that's right, in the time of the Hadrianic persecutions.
Yeah. Does that mean that he had an effect on the world, that the world was better, or it was just him?
I don't know,
in a cave.
Because he lived in very difficult times. And, so his statement about bringing innocence to the world at a time when he himself had to hide from the Romans, and they had to leave. At first he hid where his wife was, and then he was worried that the Romans would torture her. So he felt that if they went completely away into the desert, then no one would think that anyone knows where they are. But... it's interesting, you know, how does that read into the practicalities of history?
So. Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking, compare it with Rabbi Akiva, who had 24,000 pupils. You could say that he had a huge effect in the world. Look at it.
Well...
You know what I mean?
But the thing is, many of those pupils died, and I think that Rashbi is one of the group of five pupils who were left, if I haven't got it all wrong.
Or five pupils of Rabbi Akiva.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, there were five pupils left, and they transmitted Torah to the next generation.
It's an interesting.
So it was like a thin line.
It's an interesting contrast. I was saying, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, through some spiritual thing which he let, through some spiritual contact while he was in the cave, that he had this great zechus that the whole world was.
Yeah, I don't know if it's only while he's in
the
cave.
I
mean, it's when he's. It's in general when he's teaching. I mean, the fact of him being in the cave is one aspect of his life, which more shows the kind of choices of spirituality. But it was later on, and it was his later teachings and his later teachings in the Zohar. The Zohar, in a sense, ends, although it doesn't actually end there in terms of the way the Zohar is arranged, but the Zohar includes an account of the death of Rashbi. And he was surrounded by his disciples, and he was teaching them all night. This is a famous passage in the Zohar called the Idra, the hall, the great hall. Certainly in spiritual terms, there is this tikkun taking place, and ultimately, the tikkun is taking place for the whole of existence through the teachings of the Zohar, because one of the statements in the Zohar is Eliyahu Navi, Elijah the prophet, saying to Rashbi, Bahai Chibura Dilach, with this book of yours, Yifkun Bnei Yisrael Mingalusa, the Jewish people will go out of exile, Barachami, with mercy. Kad Yifanasu Minei, when it sustains them, when the Zohar really sustains them, then they will go out of exile. Now that's also a very intriguing concept. Okay. Okay, so the last couple of lines of this paragraph, Yadua Hadiuk Bazer, and it's known, the comment on this, Bitrushe Rabbeinu Nesienu, in the teachings of the previous Lubavitch Rebbeim, going back several generations. The Halo al Hamatar, it's a very simple question here. Halo al Hamatar, Matsinu Kama Tfilot Ubakashot V'taniyot. There are many prayers for rain in Judaism. In fact, the Spanish, it's said that the medieval Spaniards used to come to the Jews and ask them to pray for rain when there was a drought. They would come and ask the Jews to pray for rain because they knew that the Jews had a prayer for rain.
That worked.
Yes, that's right. Well, it's an old prayer and it's very beautiful. The time we say Tfilat Geshem is on the first day of Pesach. So in the after Musaf, on the first day of Pesach, there is a special melody with a poem, an ancient poem, for rain. And then we start saying in the Amidah, Mashiv HaRuach Omored HaGeshem. He makes the wind blow and the rain fall. So that's all connected. And we say the same with Tein Talamata. So there's a whole prayer for rain. So if we've got a tradition of prayers for rain, which work, as you say, ve'eich pa'al Rashbi yiridat mata, how did Rashbi achieve the fact that it rained? Al yidei amirat divrei Torah dafka, by saying Torah. Shouldn't he have said a prayer for rain? Why did he say Torah? Umavur b'zen, it's explained in this, the second paragraph, Dehine Yedua. Now it's known, She'etzer Rashbi Haita Torato Imunato. That's a famous statement about him, and leads to a lively conflict in the world today, in Jewish society, because Rashbi's life was only learning Torah. Torah was his skill. Like one person has a business that he deals with sheep, and another one is a carpenter, and another one is a blacksmith. He might be a Talmid Chacham as well as being a blacksmith, like Rabbi Yeshua Nafcha, who is in the Talmud, and who was a blacksmith and also a sage. But, or a scientist, or a psychologist.
It's my predecessor.
Nafcha. Nafcha, right, Nachon. Yeah, that's very interesting. So Rabbi Yeshua Nafcha is a famous figure in the Talmud. He's one of the Tanaim.
And someone once told us that Nafchan means blacksmith.
Mm-hmm. Blacksmith,
yeah.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
That's someone I did, Dave.
Yeah. Because of the bellows. The bellows to make the fire hot. So they had that in the time of the Talmud. They had that as well. They described it. So he was a blacksmith, but he was a Talmud, a great Torah scholar. But Rashbi didn't work. The only job he had was learning Torah. And the question was, how did he relate to other people who did work, as we see in the story about the cave? And of course, then we have a statement in the Talmud, Harbei asu k'Rashbi v'chavirav. You see that it's Rashbi and his friends who did the same. They only learned Torah. They didn't work at all. Harbei asu k'Rashbi v'chavirav v'lo ala b'yadam. And it didn't work for them. Many people tried to imitate him and it didn't work. In other words, they also tried to make Torah their work, their sole trade, but it didn't work. So today you could say the Jewish world is divided in attitudes about this, and there are certain streams which recommend sitting in a kollel for much of one's life, whereas quite a number of other branches of Jewish thought, including Lubavitch, do not think that that's the right thing, and one should be in the field, working, teaching, could be teaching Torah, but it should be involved with the world rather than just sitting and enjoying the delights of Torah, which is very beautiful. But as the Lubavitch Rebbe put it, in a time when the world is thirsty for knowledge of Torah, it is inexcusable luxury just to stay studying Torah in some secluded environment. So as a result, in the United States of America and elsewhere, a kind of a kollel movement developed in which the what previously had been an ivory tower kollel opened its doors and said, now we are going to make a kollel in a place which is not a Torah center, and we will invite people to come in, and in that way we will spread Torah. So someone wrote some kind of academic study of these kollelim, and he said in a conference somewhere in New York University, it's quite obvious to him that these kollelim have been influenced by Lubavitch, but he couldn't actually get anyone to admit that. However, it was it's true that it's Ruach HaZman now, it's the spirit of the time, to share. Just to keep it to oneself is not enough. But
I thought it was a response to the Holocaust that they opened up the ivory towers to the mass.
Not at all. In response to the Holocaust, they closed them. Because they said, we are the Yechidei Skula who've been left by the Holocaust, and we want to keep everything pure and holy. And so they created a Torah world which wouldn't be contaminated by people who were not so religious.
Yeah, but the Ikar sitting and studying the whole time instead of doing work and study, I sitting learning in Kollel the whole time, I understood from an article I read recently was actually a response to the Holocaust.
You could say that the emphasis on the Kollel as a style of life much more broadly through Jewish society than it had been previously. So that's the argument of quite a number of sociologists. They said, look, in the in Eastern Europe before the war, there were people who sat and studied all their lives long, but most people worked in one way or the other. Then in Israel, after the Holocaust, and to a certain extent before it, but particularly after it, became a very strong movement to just sit and learn. And that could be seen as a response to the Holocaust. But the question then came, how do the learners relate to those who are not learners, especially to secular society? So what happened in Israel is a complete rift between the so-called Datiim and the so-called Chilonim, both misnomers. So that was what happened in Israel, and then you have a parallel process taking place in America with Lithuanian Rabbanim creating a Kollel ethos and speaking against the outreach idea at the beginning, and then that later on being overturned and the Kollel itself becoming a center of outreach. Ideally, which is what it's trying to be in America, possibly in Israel as well to some extent, but certainly in America. So that's the but you could well be right. As
you're saying, they took on the pattern of Lubavitch, using it as outreach. On the other hand, when they talk, they say Lubavitch had left the yeshiva well.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, taking on the pattern that they're using, yes, that Torah becomes a mode of outreach, and they see the need to connect with society.
Are you using Rav Shimon bar Yochai as an example?
No, because Rav Shimon bar Yochai is an example.
He was hiding from the Romans in the cave.
Yeah, yeah, but apart from...
He came out of the cave and went into the world.
Yeah, but he was still, he's a figure that Torah Toim Munato, quite apart from the cave. Even if he hadn't gone into the cave. He is someone that, he is a figure that he didn't work. Torah was his work.
And but it's clear when he came out of the cave, he couldn't connect with people. That's why he burnt up all these farmers.
Yeah.
You know, but then later, the Gemara tells the story, when that came out a year later, he went to the village, And he said, what can I do to help the village? And they said, we need to dig the ditches or something, the drainage, wasn't it? And
it was to show where a grave had been. Because there were...
He wanted to do something practical.
It was. Well, it was practical, spiritual. It was interesting. When he came out, Anson's quite right, that when he came out of the cave, he tried to do something practical for society. Mm-hmm. And what he did was, there were many fields where it wasn't clear whether or not a corpse was in the field, especially after the time of Roman persecution. And the Kohanim would have to go all the way around that field because they couldn't go near where there was a corpse. So he did a lot of research, and he said the corpse is in that corner of the field only, and they would pour white lime round there, and everyone knew that's where the Kohanim can't go, and the rest of the field's all right. Or he would say there never was a corpse here. Yeah. You know, so in other words...
He knew. He described this as doing research.
He speaks about him speaking to the oldest inhabitants, and
that's how you read the Gemara.
It does.
I thought he just knew.
I think you have to take it both ways in order to understand. But the fact is that this was a practical activity. Mm. But we still don't see him, you know, dealing in business or in other things that other people are doing. He remains an icon for Torah study being his main. Okay, so then comes a whole concept in this paragraph about the way, in fact, that indeed he studies Torah all the time, and that Torah that he studies includes tefillah, because yesh bichlal matayim mana. There's 100 is included in 200. So in other words, in the spirituality of his teaching Torah and learning Torah, there is the power of prayer, and that's why he was able to bring about the downpouring of rain through saying a Torah. Okay, let's go on to the next paragraph. V'hinei amirat divrei Torah v'rashbi. Yeah, that's on the next page, there in the middle. V'hinei amirat divrei Torah v'rashbi, the teaching of Torah by Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, haita b'pnimiyut haTorah dafka, was dafka in the inwardness of Torah, as it says in the Zohar. V'tam adav ahu, and the reason for this is, Mishum she'ikav amitit inyan shalom shebetorah, because the real essence of peace in Torah, hu bepnimiyut haTorah dafka, ideally, is in the inwardness of Torah. Delei taman lo kushya v'lo machloket. There is no aggressive question and no machloket, no difference of opinion. Now, when one is studying Talmud and even studying Mishnah, right at the beginning, there are different opinions. Hillel says this, and Shammai says something else, and then the Talmud starts exploring him, and it's more different opinions. Whereas in the Zohar, or Pnimiyut HaTorah, it is a straight revelation of spirituality. It's not that this person says it's this way, and a contradiction, another person says it's another way. There are maybe different pathways, but the pathways are not that it's not the milchamta shel Torah, it's not the battle of Torah, the way one finds in Talmudic discourse. So this is something which is described as one of the differences between the inner spiritual dimension of Torah, the Kabbalah, and the pre-halachic dimension. You see, once you get the halacha, the actual halacha is giving you a line which is where everyone finally agrees. But before you get to the halacha, there are all kinds of different opinions. The halacha is a resolution of the conflict, sometimes by being more strict in order to accommodate the different opinions. But the halacha is some kind of resolution of conflict. Whereas before the halacha, the Torah discussions before the halacha have machloket, and that's that's how people study Talmud. There's a machloket between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, or this one and that one. Or kumavur gam b'divo matchil pada b'shalom l'admo haim tzayi, as is also known in the discourse said by the second Chabad Rebbe. Sheyesh kama ofanim b'inyan hapdiya. There are a number of ways of being redeemed. Ukmo shekatuv pada b'shalom nafshi mikravli. God redeemed in peace my soul, my life, from my battle. She'efshar sheyeh anitzachon b'krav. It's possible that the victory will be through a battle. Ve'efshar sheyeh shlilat hakrav al yedei shalom. And it's possible that there will be a negation of a battle by means of peace. You have peace, and you don't need a battle. Ve'yesh prina na'alit mizu, and there's an even higher level, she'zeh amitat inyan apdiya b'shalom, which is the real redemption in peace, she'ein tzarich l'shum milchama. There is no need for any war whatsoever, v'afilo lo shlilat ha'milchama. You don't even have to negate war. There's no opponent of any kind that you have to fight against them. As he says there in the discussion, in that discourse, Gam Oivav, well, that's Gam Oivav Yashlimimo. His enemies make peace with him, and you, I suppose you could have a higher level where there are no Oivim, there are no enemies. Everyone agrees. And there is a point where all different opinions and different peoples and different zramim are all unified together. But that's a very spiritual, idealistic, utopian point at the moment. V'inyan zeh yiyeh b'tachrit ha-shleimut, and this thing will be with complete wholeness, בביאת משיח צדקנו, with the coming of Mashiach. כמבוא בסיום וחותם דרוש אדמו"ר האמצעי הנ"ל, as is explained at the end of that discourse by the second Lubavitcher Rebbe. ובעבודת האדם, and in the service of the individual, הרי זה העבודה בדאגה של שלום ומנוחה בתכלית. This is the service which has peace, rest, in a total sense. שזה קשור עם פנימיות התורה דווקא. And that relates to the inner dimension of Torah study. The inner dimension of Torah study somehow reveals the Zohar dimension, the Kabbalistic dimension, the Hasidic dimension, somehow reveals an inner dimension where all opposites are unified. And that's really part of these teachings that we explore over here, kindly hosted by David and Nicole, is the way in which these teachings actually elevate one's consciousness to a level where we are able to assimilate opposites. And it's a very, very remarkable experience. It's like climbing some kind of spiritual higher ground where suddenly you can see what's this side of the mountain, what's that side of the mountain. Suddenly it can all be unified together instead of the differentness and the division that there is lower down. And of course the goal is to bring that kind of vision into our ordinary everyday lives and to be able to utilize it in our relationships with each other, with other people, and with everyone around us, and that ultimately it should become the ethos of the world, that there is a total sense of harmony. וכבר דרך מה שכתב הרמב״ם בסיום ספרו משנה תורה, as the Rambam wrote at the end of his book משנה תורה, שבאותו הזמן דלעתיד, at that time of the future, the time of Mashiach, לא יהיה שם לא רעב ולא מלחמה, there won't be famine, there won't be war, ולא קינה, no jealousy, ותחרות, no competition, ולא יהיה עסק כל העולם כולו, and the involvement of the entire world will be אפילו כל באי עולם, including also the Gentiles. כל באי עולם means all inhabitants of the world, including the Gentiles. אלא לדעת את השם בלבד, their whole goal will be to know Hashem. That's what people will be doing.
It's not really assimilating difference. Making everyone do the same.
Good point.
Well, it's two. It seems like there are two different ideas. One, assimilating difference. So there's accepting that there can be opposites, like you said, opposites that can be reconciled. And another view that says that there are no opposites. It's like it's two different.
state service?
Well, I mean, what would be an opposite of knowledge of God?
But knowledge of God, when they say it, they mean it in quite practical terms, in the way you live your life, doesn't it? And so the opposite of that is someone who chooses to live a good life without thinking that they are doing it under the framework of a...
of a divine teaching, of a religious belief. Well, I mean, you're right. Because the Hasidic Kabbalistic view is that there is a kind of a spiritual reality which beckons people to be part of it, and when people are part of it, their former differences are dissolved, and I would add they recognize their quest in that reality. They see that what they were seeking was in the reality of the infinite as it's revealed. Now, that does lead to a situation where, in a sense, everyone is the same, in that the Jews are keeping 613 mitzvah and the non-Jews are keeping 7 Noahide laws. But I think that the way that the Rebbe taught this in many different talks is that people would see that as their own personal reality. They wouldn't see it that they're abandoning something of themselves in order to keep these rules, these lifestyle rules. You know, so if a lifestyle means not stealing or sexual morality or whatever it might be, but just see that as their deepest meaning. And so it's interesting. I mean, this is the point where it departs from a pure postmodern situation, pluralist situation, where one person is into this, another person is into that. And you would say that according to the rules of A, B is doing wrong, and according to the rules of B, A is doing wrong. So in a totally pluralist situation, everyone is able to coexist. So the Hasidic image does go beyond that. It's, in a sense, it's post-postmodernism. Where there is an absolute standard, but it's an absolute standard which is something that is recognized by each individual as their own individual reality. And their own personal history was a trajectory which was leading to that reality. So that's to that kind of perception. So in other words, it's understood as a time of fulfillment, of self-fulfillment and unity. But you're quite right that in terms of looking at, you know, recognition of negativity, this ultimate messianic image is that the negativity dissolves away. It could be that on the route towards that image, one needs to be able, perhaps, to recognize or accept quote-unquote negativity in order to have a deeper relationship with the other person. So in chapter Lamed Bet, the Lev, the heart of Tanya, written by Rabbi Shneur Zalman around 1796, it says there, you should love other people who are sinners. He's talking about people who are not keeping Torah. You should love them because maybe that will help them come close to Torah and mitzvot. Vehein lo, and in case they don't come close to Torah and mitzvot, lo hifsid mitzvah ahavat reyim. You haven't lost the mitzvah of love of people. So it's good to love people, and it may be that loving people will make those people more observant of Jewish teaching. But if not, it's still good to love people. And I think that that's a very important concept right at the heart of the Chabad tradition. Because that leads to a way of being able to feel connected with people, whatever the people are doing. And that is a kind of pluralistic situation. That's like the modern Chabad house, concept, you know, where it is a very accepting situation, you know, or always within certain limits, but then the actual resolution of the messianic goal is one which goes a step further, where in fact everyone, including, let's say, the religious person, you know, the quote-unquote religious person, is also hidebound by all kinds of limitations. And making that further step would enable that person to discover their own reality, which is a reality which includes everyone else as well. You know, so there is they're stepping beyond limitations. So there we have this idea of peace, which comes through this. Okay, let's go over the page, and it's getting late. Okay, and so then it talks about, in the later part of this paragraph, on page 182, the whole idea of the Mayanot, the fountains of Rashbi, and of the inwardness of Torah, and the way in which these fountains of Rashbi lead to the Shleimut, the wholeness, in every way within existence, and so the world expressed this through the rain which came down in the story in the Zohar, the pouring of rain of blessing. Now,
can you take us to the Mayanot?
Yeah, but we're missing out this paragraph basically.
Okay.
So as to get on to the next one, which is V'hinei Torah, page 182.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mayanot, I see it.
Okay. Okay, page 182, the middle of the page, V'hinei. V'hinei ha-Torah sh'amar Rashbi, the teaching that Rashbi said, ha'ita la pasuk, hinei ma'tov u'manayim shevet achim gam yachad, how beautiful it is, the sitting of brothers together, which, as he's already said, shezei niyana yichud zeh v'nukva, that is the unity of male and female, v'al yedei zeh yarad ha-matan, through that the rain fell, and it's explained in Hasidic teachings from earlier generations, Tam Adava, the reason for this. The root of the actual pouring of rain, blessing, pouring of blessing in the world, comes from a unity of the male and the female above in the spiritual realms, in the world of Atzilut. Therefore, when he said a teaching which concerns in some way this unity of male and female above, through that the rain fell below. So through the very, his teaching, as it were, bonds together the sfirot, the male and female dimension, so that there is a flow below. More than that, that even when the world needed rain, the world needed rain, the world was not the way it's supposed to be, the world was not whole, the world lacked, that's what it means, the world needed rain, the world was crooked, there was things wrong with the world, olam milashon ha'elem behester. And the word olam can be read as helem, hester, concealment. Hinei afopichem, nonetheless. Kashama Rashbi Torah binyan yichud zun, when he said a Torah about the connection, the unification of male and female in the spiritual realms, harizeh himshich yeridat hakshamim ba'olam, this drew down the rain falling in the world, gam kafish hu b'mamad umatzav zeh, even when it is in that situation. Here you have, it didn't improve the world, make the world perfect. The world was still imperfect, but in its imperfect state it gets blessing. And so he was able to reach to a level of spirituality and trigger off a mode in which blessing come to an imperfect world. That's Obavia Pietele Shona Katubanal, and explaining that in detail, Mavuasham, it's explained in a teaching by the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek. Sheyesh b'zeh kama pchatim, there are many details in this. The Nosaf l'zeh sheyesh lo inyan shevet achim, not only do you have the brothers sitting together, meaning male and female, shein zeh inyan achdut zeh v'nukva, the unity of zeh and nukva of these sfirot and kingship of Malchut, hine od zot sheze gufal beinyan the yachad, the word yachad, shevet achim gam yachad, brothers sitting together. The pirish yachad umilashon yichud v'zivug, the word yachad means unification, intimacy. Va'od sheba pasuk ze nimazu gam kol ha'eses sfirot. This earlier teaching explains that in this verse there are all the ten sfirot. Shahari tevat gam, the word gam, also. Shevet achim gam yachad. Ma'beh asfirot avor chokhmah bina, that includes wisdom and understanding. Ulamayla yoter, and higher still keter. So in other words, it's reading into this verse, or revealing from the verse, that you have the male dimension, the female dimension, and the male and the female not only are together, but they're unified together in intimacy, and included in this is wisdom and understanding, and also keter from the highest level. Now, that's the level of gum. And I wanted to look up in that other discourse to see whether he explains why particularly the word gum represents this, but I wasn't able to. That's homework. So there we have Ve'yesh lomar habiyo bezeh she'eino maspik an inyan yichud zun. It's not enough just having the unification of male and female, but there also has to be eretzalech liot gam amshachat ava. Above aim, that means Chochma Bina, until the spirit Keter. So he explains the whole idea that in order for there to be a unity on a lower level, I'm going to summarize this bit. In order for there to be a unity on a lower level, you have to have a flow from a higher level. Now that's really the thing about differentness and the relationships within differentness. You see, at a certain level, the differentness is like in a plane, and one has to be able to see beyond the differentness and be able to be recognized in the other, the self, and join with that other. But there is a point when a revelation comes from a higher level, where both self and other dissolve in their opposing qualities, and instead one has a sense of identity. And so that's why he's explaining, that's why in this sort of tradition of discourses about the story in the Zohar and about this verse, there is the idea of reaching to a higher level, and that higher level achieves the unity all the way down. And that's why Rashbi in the Zohar, in order to bring rain to an unhappy, to a troubled world, to a world which was not going to be changed at that moment, it was going to go on being a troubled world and a violent world. In fact, this relates very well with your question before about the historical, well, the way I understood it, the historical period he was living was a shocking historical period. And nonetheless, in that shocking historical period, he was able to reveal a teaching of absolute unity and oneness. Because there's a sense in which the teaching transcends the problems of the moment, and it's particularly when one is in a seriously bad situation that one is able to see that oneness just the same as if everything was very good. And recognizing that the world has negative spots, the world needs rain, meaning that there's something very problematic about the world. And nonetheless, it's in that world that he revealed these beautiful teachings. And those teachings then flow down, and they cause the yichud, the intimacy between those different dimensions on every level down, until rain fell in practical terms. So,
is this why people can get married in Lag BaOmer?
That's a lovely reason. I don't know, but if someone did get married in Lag BaOmer, you could give a beautiful talk on that. That's very lovely. Okay. And then comes a further thing about Moshe and Aaron. That's in this next paragraph, and a whole image about brachot pouring from Aaron, and he relates it to the Birkat Kohanim, the way the blessings of the priests pour down, so this rain is being transformed into blessings, tangible blessings for the Jewish people. And then we go on to the last page, and the whole idea of the Chavraya, the last page talks about the community, the Talmidim, the society of Rashbi, and the way in, and the Talmud refers to Rashbi v'chaverav, and the idea that this community, this Chavraya, should be with Achdut, with unity, and it could be the Rebbe was praying or pleading that people should be unified, because that's always a problem among human beings. And so he's asking that there should be unity. And so then if we move into the last paragraph, Umikol ze yuvan, so all this we can understand, in our own service, our own actions through the time of exile, it was explained above, the ultimate peace will be in the future, then there will be the real redeeming in peace, my soul. Amlam, however, something like that, Yeshno kvar bizman hazeh, there is already now, belimud pnimiut haTorah, by learning the inner dimension of Torah, the leitam and lo machloket velo kushya, where there is no conflict, ukmosh nidbare le'el, as explained above, she'inyan ze yeshno afilu b'chol ba'e olam. This concept exists among the non-Jews as well. V'kol shekein b'kal v'chom, and how much more b'vnei Yisrael, that it should be among the Jews, Shahatorah hi Yerusha lechulam, for the Torah is their inheritance. Val yidei avodah ba'ofen zeh, and through this service, in this way, zochim kol Yisrael b'karov mamash, the Jewish people will achieve very swiftly the milui ha'yud, the chimala aretz zeh Hashem, that the world will be filled with knowledge of God. Kamayim layom mechasim, where like the waters cover the sea, shiyeh gilui pnimiut haTorah, the inwardness of Torah will be revealed. Gilui da'at boram kafikoch adam, the revealing of the mind of their creator as much as man has the ability to recognize. V'yeteira mizu, and more than this, but often the kamayim layom mechasim, in a way of water covering the sea, abundantly, bimhera b'yameinu mamash, swiftly in our day, ubifchat al yedei biyur rabaseinu nesiyenu, especially as our rabbeim have explained, shal yedei hafatzat hamayanot chutza, through the bursting forth of the wellsprings of the inwardness of Torah, which goes back to be the Torah of Rashbi, through that bursting forth into the outside, מביאים את הגאולה האמיתית והשלמה, one brings the true and complete redemption על ידי משיח צדקנו, שהוא משיח בעגלה מדידן in our time ובמהרה בימינו ממש.